Beginning today, the Aitken Community Hospice in Comox will have more beds to offer end-of-life care to residents of the Comox Valley. Last year, the province made changes to funding for long-term care staffing. This resulted in the closure of hospice beds across the island, including in Comox. And for an update this morning, we're joined by Brennan Day, a conservative MLA for Courtney Comox and the official opposition critic for rural health and seniors' health. He's on the phone. Brennan, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us again. Aitken Community Hospice had 6 beds before it was forced to scale back operations last fall. Can you remind us what happened?
Well, there was cuts to the long-term care funding model. There was COVID-era overtime and agency staffing that was cut back rather suddenly. And unfortunately, in the shuffle, we lost 3 of those beds to short staffing at the facility here in the Comox Valley.
Okay, so you went from 6 beds to 3 beds. And what did that loss mean to the community overall?
Well, dozens of people were turned away from hospice care. The government and the ministry indicated that they would be making at-home palliative care options more accessible. Unfortunately, that never happened. So it did result in more people ending up in the hallways and hospital wards versus, you know, a dignified end. So it was really challenging here in the Comox Valley.
Okay, and I appreciate you mentioning the possibility of hospice care at home. If that commitment had been followed through on or to a fuller extent, could that have been an acceptable solution in your mind if people actually had been able to access hospice care in home rather than having to go to hospital?
In some cases, certainly that is an option, but we were hearing from the staff here that do the at-home palliative care that they were already stretched to the breaking point and are short a couple staff members themselves. So in reality, it's a service that never followed, unfortunately. So if we're going to go to that route, we need to make sure that those services are also expanded and properly funded. It seems like hospice care and palliative care in British Columbia is sort of an afterthought, unfortunately.
Okay, so let's come back to today then. After losing half of those 6 beds earlier, what's happening now?
Well, currently we're going through a staged opening period now through to February 2nd, where all 6 beds will be reopened again. They'll still be short a couple of shifts, but at least that will recover the capacity. Otherwise, a lot of those patients would be seen in hospitals, and that obviously we know are having their own challenges in terms of crowding and capacity.
Mm-hmm. And I understand the closure of the beds was always meant to be temporary, but this reopening announcement is a bit of a surprise. It's ahead of schedule, is it?
Well, that's the way that they'd like us to take it. We didn't know when this would actually be announced. We assumed they may kick it down to the end of March, which would have been the end of the fiscal year. We're very glad to see those opening up earlier than the end of the fiscal year. What we've seen across the province is when temporary closures take effect, they often turn permanent given the staffing problems across the province.
And so where's the funding coming from then? How is this being accounted for?
So this is all on health. Unfortunately, we're in a unique situation here in the Comox Valley where the facility is privately owned. So the staffing is provided through Island Health, supplied by the private facility into the space, which was largely fundraised by the Comox Valley Hospice Society, who have done some amazing work and were key in the efforts to get these beds reopened.
Okay, and so are you hoping that the funding situation, once they're back up and running with 6 beds, will it? I mean, do you have reasonable expectation that it will now remain stable and they'll be able to keep all of those 6 beds open?
That would be my expectation. We know other hospices are struggling with similar challenges down in Victoria, certainly, and I'll be meeting with them in the upcoming weeks. I think what the ministry really needs to look at is how to stabilize hospice funding across the province. It's not an optional of the continuum of care. We really need to ensure that hospice is standardized and the care you're getting is not due to what postal code you live in.
And what is your overall assessment, Brennan, of hospice care across the province? You mentioned it earlier, but is this province meeting national best practice guidelines when it comes to end-of-life care?
Again, it's extremely regionally dependent. The funding models are all over the place in terms of how much is being paid by the province, what share is being fundraised privately. And again, I think the hospice and palliative care providers really just need to see that consistency so they know what target to aim for. We know in the Comox Valley, 7 beds to 8 beds would be the, adequate. We're at 6, which is close. There are also communities that don't have any hospice or palliative care at all. So it's extremely hit or miss across the province in terms of what you're going to see for hospice care.
Ultimately, hospice care is a compassionate solution, and it's about quality of life at the end of life. So I don't mean to boil this down to money, but I wonder about the costs of it in general. I mean, is there an economic case, strictly economic case, as well as all the other arguments in favor of hospice beds in terms of investing more in rural community hospice services, in your view?
Absolutely. I mean, we need to look at it as healthcare, just like anything else. We know that 1 in 20 people are now opting for MAID in the province of British Columbia. And unfortunately, that is in many cases due to the fact that end-of-life care and inadequate care and long-term is available in the communities they live at. So, we can't wash our hands of the obligation we have to our elders in giving them a, respectful, dignified end-of-life care. And unfortunately, that's not part of the expectation right now. We know that healthcare is struggling across the board. And unfortunately, this is one that gets lost. Hospice care people, after they've gone through that support and have seen that dignified end, unfortunately, don't write complaint letters.
Right. And on the topic of cost, Brennan, one other question. Is there a significant difference between providing those fixed facility hospice beds versus at-home palliative hospice care?
Certainly there is a difference in cost, but at the end of the day, having the staffing levels that are required for the more complex cases and that pain management can't be done at home. So it's a very unique to each individual, the type of care that they're able to access and the type of care that they need at their end of life. So both options need to be on the table. And there are people that, don't wish to pass away at home. They would prefer to pass away in a facility. And unfortunately, if those facilities aren't available, they're left with very limited options. And unfortunately, that largely sees them in the emergency room or other areas of the hospital.
So while the Comox Valley, to go back to where we started, to end, while the Comox Valley goes back to the 6 beds that it once had, what are your final thoughts on how likely we are to see any major increase in hospice, particularly rural hospice service spending?
Well, certainly it's going to take a lot more advocacy from the hospice providers across the province. And given the budget constraints currently under this government, I don't think that expansion of any services in this province are likely in the foreseeable future, given the fact that we're staring down a $12 billion deficit and the revenue side of the ledger still hasn't fully recovered. So it'll be a challenge across healthcare for some time to come, but I think we need to make sure we have our priorities right once we do get things stabilized.
Brennan Day is the Conservative MLA for Courtney Comox and the opposition critic, the official opposition critic for Rural Health and Seniors Health. Brennan, thanks for joining us on the show again.
Yeah, thank you very much, Gregor.
If you were to bring the size and cost of the bureaucracy back down to 2019 levels, right before the pandemic, right before, government finances completely went off the cliff, okay? And then you still increase those costs by inflation, yep. Taxpayers would still save about $18 billion this year. That's how insane the growth of the bureaucracy really took off from 2019, essentially through today.
So the Canadian Taxpayers Federation just put out this brand new report on the federal bureaucracy. You know, as a guy who looks at this kind of stuff every day, I always knew it was bad, but Franco did the legwork, put in the research, and it's a lot worse than I could imagine. So we've got this report. We're going to take you folks through it point by point and talk about all the crazy things going on in Canada's bureaucracy. But Franco, want to give us the top headline? What's happening in the report? Bad, good, bad?
Awful. I mean, look, the key takeaway is that taxpayers are getting soaked, right? Ottawa has such a bloated bureaucracy. And like, the reason you're paying way too much tax, the reason the government is taking so much money from you is to sustain this absolutely bloated, massive behemoth of a federal bureaucracy. I mean, look, like, let's say 3 points right off the top. Number one, the cost and size of the bureaucracy has absolutely grown out of control, right? It's like bureaucracy gone wild in Ottawa here. 80% increase in the cost over 10 years, adding about 100,000 extra bureaucrats. But the point number two, like moving forward, if we're going to fix federal finances, you gotta shrink the bureaucracy significantly. You gotta fire bureaucrats, right? Because like more than half of the government's day-to-day spending is being consumed by the bureaucracy, right? The federal government is more than $1 trillion in debt. Prime Minister Mark Carney is borrowing $80 billion this year. Debt interest charges are costing taxpayers more than $1 billion a week. Well, to fix that mess of federal finances, you have to cut the bureaucracy in Ottawa. And the final point, we'll get to this in a bit, but you know, Carney's budget 2025, it is not meaningfully making the bureaucracy more affordable for taxpayers. No, no, no. If anything, it is entrenching Trudeau's out of control bureaucrat hiring spree.
Yeah. So let's get the first thing I think is the huge growth over the last 10 years we've seen from the bureaucracy. Like everybody kind of expects, yeah, more people move to Canada. We're going to hire a couple more bureaucrats to do X, Y, or Z. But the numbers in this report are like insane in the amount that it's grown in the last 10 years. So you said that it cost about $40 billion for bureaucracy in 2015. Last year at 71.4. What happened? How did that happen?
Yeah, the cost of the federal bureaucracy increased 80% in 10 years. An 80% increase in the cost of the federal bureaucracy to taxpayers in 10 years. Yeah, no wonder taxes are up and the debt has spiraled out of control. Yeah, folks, like, think about it. $71 billion is what the federal bureaucracy cost you in one single year last year. More than $71 billion. Just 10 years ago, it was under $40 billion, okay? An 80% increase in the cost of the federal bureaucracy to taxpayers in 10 years. And we can get more into like what Canadians think about the bureaucracy in a little bit, but like just ask yourself a simple question. Are you getting 80% better services from the federal bureaucracy? Yeah, right. Right. Unless like you are employed by the government, you're taking a taxpayer funded paycheck. I think the answer to that question is a big fat no.
Yeah. And that huge cost number, you said 80% in 10 years. To put it in different perspective from a guy from the prairies, the amount of money the government spent on just the bureaucracy last year federally is the entire budget of more than three Saskatchewans. And that's everything, which I always think is kind of ridiculous.
Hey, Engage, like, let me also put another fine point on this, like, cost, right? Because here's another thing that just grinds people's gears. Like, not only are you paying for way more in-house government bureaucrats, but you're also paying more for outside help, right?
Yeah.
So we just mentioned $71 billion plus for the federal bureaucracy, right? The bureaucrats working in the departments, Crown corporations, agencies, right? But you're also paying for more outside help. So the government has this category of spending called professional and special services. That's just a broad category of spending. And it means like spending from the government on consultants, contractors, and outsourcing. Okay, well, the government spent $23 billion on this professional and special services last year. The government's spending on that, the government's spending on contractors, outsourcing, consultants, more than doubled in 10 years. Okay. So not only has the cost of the in-house bureaucracy increased 80% in 10 years, the cost of this outside help the consultants, the outsourcing, the contractors, more than doubled over that time.
So, I mean, that kind of begs the question, what are all these bureaucrats doing? Because I think when taxpayers ask the question that you asked a couple minutes ago, are you getting 80% better services? And now it's, you said, more than doubling of this outside help and consultants. I don't think there's a single taxpayer out there who thinks that service has gotten better. So what are these people doing? Why are they costing taxpayers so much money? What's the reason that the government's even getting for this?
Well, it's managers managing managers, right? Yeah. Managers managing managers. And look, like the number one reason that you saw this massive increase in the cost of the bureaucracy is because of the bureaucrat hiring spree, right? Just the sheer amount of additional paper pushers that Ottawa put on the taxpayer payroll, right? So look, over those 10 years, the federal government added 99,000 extra employees, okay? About 100,000 extra bureaucrats added since the beginning of 2016. And it's not like there was a bureaucrat shortage in Ottawa before 2016. Like, the federal government was already bloated then, and then they add an extra 99,000 bureaucrats. Like, this is how crazy it is, right? In 10 years, there are 7 departments and agencies that more than doubled their number of bureaucrats in 10 years. 7 different departments, right? Housing, Infrastructures, and Communities Canada, 375% increase in the number of bureaucrats. Women and Gender Equality Canada, 334% increase. RCMP External Review Committee, 229% increase. Elections Canada, 173% increase. Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada, 158% increase. Financial Consumer Agency of Canada, 154% increase. The Impact Assessment Agency of Canada, 127% increase, right? So at 7 departments and agencies, more than doubled the number of bureaucrats. And oh, by the way, can't forget about the Canada Revenue Agency, right? Yeah. One of the most bloated, completely incompetent arms of the government. Well, they added 13,000 extra bureaucrats at the CRA, okay? 13,000 extra bureaucrats at the CRA in 10 years. Good luck getting a bureaucrat at the CRA on the phone. And if you do get the CRA on the phone, they're probably going to give you the wrong tax information anyways.
Yeah, because what was the number on that? You just talked about it again. What's the likelihood that you're actually getting a correct answer when you phone the bloated CRA that seems to have all these people but not doing anything?
Yeah. So, and this was from the Auditor General report, right? They gave out the correct answer to personal tax questions just 17% of the time, right? They gave out, Gage, it would have been bad if they gave the wrong answer 17% of the time. They gave the right answer 17% of the time on personal tax questions. And Gage, that's assuming you can get anyone from the CRA on the phone, which is a huge assumption because, you know, the Auditor General found that in the most previous year, only like a third of Canadians' phone calls actually went to a live CRA bureaucrat with an actual pulse.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, you just think about it, anyone else with a job. If our boss found out I was only doing the right thing 70% of the time, he wouldn't be my boss anymore because I'm fired. But the bureaucrats seem to keep on trucking. But it's not just the amount of bureaucrats, the total cost. The pay for the individual bureaucrats and all the benefits they're getting has also been increasing a lot over the past couple of years. Can you kind of go into those details too?
Yeah, and like, it's not only that these bureaucrats are getting paid to do a bad job, they're getting bonuses when they do a bad job, right? It's taxpayer money rewarding failure with taxpayer-funded bonuses, right? So in the most recent year, when you look at both Crown corporations and federal departments and agencies, in the most recent year where data is available, the federal government rubber-stamped $400 million in bonuses, okay? This brings the total amount of bonuses over about 10 years to more than $1.5 billion. First of all, why is the government bureaucrats, why are they getting bonuses? Right. Yep. Like what? But second of all, like, the government is rewarding failure with bonuses. Right. You know, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, for years, we were railing against the CBC handing out taxpayer funded bonuses for what? But it's not just the CBC. Right. You had the Bank of Canada, right, whose one job was to keep inflation low and around 2%. They completely failed. Yet they handed out millions of dollars in bonuses. The Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, right? This housing agency, these housing bureaucrats who always talked about like, oh, you know, their number one goal being housing affordability for all. Well, Canada, we went through or and still are going through a housing crisis. And yet these bureaucrats rubber stamped millions of dollars in bonuses. Or, you know, the one that infuriates me the most is Arrive Scam, right?
Yeah.
The simple app. That launched with a price tag of 80 grand, it ballooned somehow to like 60 million bucks, right? $60 million. And then the government executives working on ArriveCan took $340,000 in bonuses. Barf.
Franco, give me a list of all the bureaucrats that got bonuses, and it seems like it's not ending. Maybe it's an easier question. Was there any bureaucrat out there in Ottawa who didn't get an extra check at the end of the year?
That's probably easier to find. Hey, it seems like all a bureaucrat has to do is show up to work twice a week with their shoes tied, and here's a taxpayer funded bonus. But you know, in all seriousness, look, 90% of government executives take a bonus every year. That's the average. And what's crazy about this is like, you know, don't even believe me when I say they're doing a bad job. I mean, don't even believe your own eyes and common sense. Like everyone knows they're doing a bad job, but you know, the government actually tracks department performance results over the last 5 years. You can find it online. It's in this report. And over the last 5 years, they only met half of their own performance targets three times, right? So in two of those 5 years, they just completely didn't even meet half of their own performance targets, right? Their own tests that they write for themselves, they couldn't pass. But their best year, they reached what? They met less than 54% of their own targets. And that was their best year. They met less than 54% of their own performance targets. So, I mean, it's an absolute, well, it just makes you want to barf. Like I said, it's disgusting.
Well, that's the thing again, too, like that makes my blood boil. Makes you so angry. And you talk about how much these individual bureaucrats are making, how much they're getting in bonuses. But then we go a little bit deeper into the data and compare it to people who work similar jobs in the private sector are getting paid much less than these bureaucrats. And that's ridiculous because they're paying these bureaucrats salaries and they're taking home all these bonuses, all these everything else. They retire earlier on that kind of data, while the people who are actually paying the bills are left worse off, and Ottawa doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, and Gage, here's like the biggest comparison, right? So look, when you talk about government bureaucrat pay, salary is just the tip of the iceberg, right? Because you have all these different other perks, you got these taxpayer funded pensions, all this kind of stuff. So look, the average compensation for a full-time federal bureaucrat, salary, pay, perks, bonuses, pension, the average compensation for a full-time federal bureaucrat is $148,000 annual.
Yeah.
Average compensation. That's according to the Parliamentary Budget Officer. Now, for comparison, right, in the exact same year, according to Statistics Canada, the wage paid to the average Canadian worker in that same year was just under 70 grand. Okay?
Yeah.
It's gross. And, you know, the average total pay for a bureaucrat was 148 grand. By the way, that was the most recent data. That's from 2023. But the PBO forecasts every year out to the future that they're just going to be getting higher pay.
Where's it going? What's it going to go to make people even angrier? Get the facts.
$172,000 a year by 2030. $172,000.
To meet just slightly over half of your targets. That's ridiculous. And that's the whole point. And we keep going because then it just keeps growing in every other aspect as well. Because you said it was 148,000 is the average compensation paid. But the number of bureaucrats in total who are making more than just $100,000, which is still a pretty good, you know, steep price, has even been growing as well, too, on that other end, right?
And that's just salary. Okay. So now let's just talk about salaries, right?
Yeah.
We just mentioned like, it's just the tip of the iceberg, but let's just look at salaries for government employees. Okay. Federal government employees. So there's now more than 146,000 federal employees with a six-figure salary. That's like 40% of the entire federal payroll is getting a six-figure salary. But think about it this way too. So in 2015, there was 43,000 bureaucrats with a six-figure salary. Okay. 2024, there was 146,000 Okay. So more than tripled in 10 years.
These facts aren't fun. That's when you
I'm being a little bit of a rain cloud.
Yeah. When you first sent me this report, I was like, oh, yeah. I work for the Taxpayers Federation bureaucrats. Too many of them. I didn't realize there was this much too many of them taking so much money in every single aspect.
Yeah, but you know, people need to know this. Like, this is their money, and the only way to hold politicians, bureaucrats accountable, is to actually know this information. So, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm being a rain cloud, guys. And look, I know I yell sometime in this microphone. I see it in the comments. People are like, Franco, stop yelling. I'm mad. I'm Italian. I talk with my hands. I'm emotional, and this stuff pisses me off. I'm sorry, folks, but we do have some good news. Okay, so the good news is that Canadians are sick and tired of it. So we worked with Leger, a national polling firm, and we asked Leger, hey, can you just like ask Canadians, poll Canadians on what they want to see with the federal bureaucracy? So the good news is that according to this Leger poll, 54% of Canadians said no, cut the size and cost of the federal bureaucracy. Okay. And why that's important is you always hear these politicians, these political pundits on TV saying, you know, the sky will fall. They run around pretending they're Chicken Little, saying the sky will fall if a bureaucrat gets fired. Oh, Canadians would never support that. No, no, no. This polling shows that more than half of Canadians want the government to cut the size and costs of the federal bureaucracy. But this is where I find it really interesting, because we've talked about the massive increase in the bureaucracy since 2016, right? The cost going up 80%. Yep. So Leger just also asked Canadians, like, hey, do you think federal services have gotten better or worse since 2016 with the growing bureaucracy? Gage, 50% of Canadians, half of Canadians said federal services have gotten worse, right? Not stayed the same, not get a little better. Half of Canadians said federal services have gotten worse since 2016, even with the massive increase in the bureaucracy. So that tells me definitively that adding more bureaucrats does not mean better outcomes.
Well, what I thought was a little bit funny in the first part of the poll is there's only 4% of respondents who think that the government should increase the bureaucracy. And I wonder if we can ask Leger if those are respondents from Ottawa or where they're located.
It makes me think even people within the bureaucracy is like, yeah, there's some fat to cut here. Like,
Well,
you know, but Dale down the street over there, like Dale in the next office cubicle, he's not doing much work. We could probably get rid of that guy.
But Franco, okay, we talked about it. People want to cut the bureaucracy. We went through the huge growth in numbers of people, in the costs, in how much they're paid. But shouldn't someone say, you kind of touched on it earlier, but the prime minister said that he's doing something about it. He's going to cut bureaucrats, right? So why are you making all this hullabaloo? Why are you getting mad on camera again? He's doing it. Why are you being outraged?
Well, because like if you actually go through the numbers, and this report does that, it shows that Carney is not serious about making the bureaucracy affordable. He's really entrenching Trudeau's bureaucrat hiring spree. So you might have heard that, you know, in the last budget, Carney plans on cutting 40,000 employees, about 10%, by the end of 2028, right? Mm-hmm. And you might be thinking, oh, that's a lofty goal, but it falls flat once you actually look at the numbers. Okay, in fact, what Carney is promising, he's pinky promising that in a couple years, in a few years, he will plan to bring Ottawa's headcount down to the number that it was at the end of 2021 during the heart of Trudeau's pandemic spending spree, right? That is not significantly reducing the bureaucracy. Carney's plan in a couple years in the future, pinky promise, I swear we'll find some savings. Even if it were to materialize, it would just bring the bureaucracy to the same number of bureaucrats as it was at the end of 2021. During the heart of Trudeau's pandemic spending spree. So that's just the number. We can go into more of the details, but that's just the number.
Yeah. And then what would the cost look like on that front too? But say there's going to be less bureaucrats, but will they cost less or they won't?
Ah, that's a great question, right? Because it's not just the number of bureaucrats, it's also the cost. And that's influenced by salary, perks, pensions, all that kind of stuff. And as we alluded to earlier, right, the parliamentary budget officer noted that no, like salary, pay, perks, all of that is going to continue to increase. So if Carney just cuts the number of bureaucrats by 10%, but salaries, you know, bonuses, pensions, all of those costs continue to go up, like it looks like that's what's going to happen, then look, Carney's bureaucracy in 2028, even after some of those savings, if they were to ever to materialize, will still cost taxpayers about $3 billion more than Trudeau's bureaucracy in 2022, even after adjusting for inflation. So even, you know, at the heart of Trudeau's crazy bureaucratic spending spree, Carney's bureaucracy in a couple of years, even if those cuts materialize, could still end up costing taxpayers about $3 billion more, even after adjusting for inflation.
So it's a nothing burger, essentially. But Franco, I think I know the answer to the next question, but what does Carney need to do instead to actually make the bureaucracy affordable?
Significantly cut the cost of bureaucracy. Fire bureaucrats, okay? You know, attrition ain't going to cut it, right? The time for the little scalpel to government waste was years and years and years ago, okay? That won't cut it. You got to, like, look, the point we're at now is you got to fire bureaucrats. There's like, and I mean a significant number. And let me just explain to you how crazy the cost of bureaucracy has really gone, right? If it hasn't even been enough already. But look, if you were to bring the size and cost of the bureaucracy back down to 2019 levels, right before the pandemic, right before, you know, government finances completely went off the cliff, okay? And then you still increase those costs by inflation, yep, taxpayers would still save about $18 billion this year, right? So if you just brought the bureaucracy down to the bloated levels it was in 2019 and then adjusted upward for inflation, taxpayers would save almost $18 billion. That's how insane the growth of the bureaucracy really took off from 2019 essentially through today.
Yeah. In putting that perspective too, that would take a significant chunk about off of what the government is borrowing this year to pay for all these bureaucrats, right? And that helps taxpayers in that way too. So when we're talking about what Carney's trying to do, it seems like it's much more of a cat and mouse game where he's not actually going to get any of these savings, even if he accomplishes his goal. So what taxpayers have to do is push for him to go farther and cut more. Is that right?
Yeah, of course. And look, Carney needs to also be honest with the bureaucracy. Because here's the truth of the matter. The biggest threat to a government bureaucrat's paycheck isn't political ideology. It's not. It's not even the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Okay. The biggest threat to a government bureaucrat's paycheck is the interest charges on the debt. Okay. Yeah. You want proof of that? Just ask the Saskatchewan NDP of the 90s what happened when you let government finances completely spiral out of control and interest charges just eat more and more of the budget. Okay. What did Saskatchewan do? Right. They had to close down dozens of rural hospitals across the province. Right. And that was the Saskatchewan NDP, the New Democrats. All right. And look at the mess we're in, where now, folks, every single dollar you pay in federal sales tax goes to pay interest on the debt. Right. Borrowing $80 billion about this year. Like, this is the mess we're in. And, you know, Carney not only should be honest with taxpayers and be like, no, we have to clean this mess, we got to fire bureaucrats, he should be honest with the bureaucrats as well. Because the biggest threat to a government bureaucrat's paycheck is not political ideology, it is the interest charges on the debt.
Yeah, he's got to be straight and say, we can't keep kicking this town. You can't keep kicking this can down the road, because either some of you go and we solve the problem, or all of you go in a little bit of time. So I think that makes a lot of sense and it's the right way to go. But I think that kind of covers most of what we've got in the report. Is there any kind of last takes you think you want to leave with people before they click off this video and go send an email to Carney to tell him to cut the bureaucracy?
Oh, you're getting soaked. And look, you're paying way too much tax to sustain this bloated government bureaucracy. I mean, look, here's the thing, folks. Government is not supposed to be a white collar welfare scheme. That's not the point of this whole thing. Okay. Like, we have to significantly cut the size and cost of the federal bureaucracy. You wonder why the debt is spiraled out of control. You wonder why your tax bill always seems to be going up. Look no further than the massive bloated federal bureaucracy.
Well, there you have it. And if you want to get into the more nitty-gritty details of Franco's report, you can find it on our website at taxpayer.com. And while you're there, feel free to check out some other stuff or sign a petition on an issue that you care about, like cutting the bureaucracy or slashing government spending and stopping those huge debt interest payments. And make sure that if you enjoyed this and thought it was useful, like, comment, and subscribe on the video and send it to a couple friends who need to know.